WrestleMania Saturday was a very dull show with an excellent ending. WrestleMania Sunday was a largely excellent show with a terrible ending. That is the best way that I can sum up WrestleMania 41. I don't understand how... put it this way. I'm trying to collect my thoughts here. I'm just picturing Stone Cold driving his ATV into the barricade before the main event and just thinking what a great metaphor it was for what we got in the main event tonight. I'm trying to figure out which is worse, Austin's driving or Triple H's booking of that main event tonight. And I'm not sure I really have a straight answer for you. John Cena is a 17-time world champion. That's really the lead story here tonight. John Cena has made history by becoming a 17-time world champion. He did so as a heel, and he did so with the help of Travis Scott. So when they go down in history, in the record books, and people look back on this moment and they think, oh man, I wonder what happened. When John Cena won that record championship at WrestleMania 41, they're going to see that it was Travis Scott who assisted him in doing so. Not The Rock. The Rock was nowhere to be found tonight. I was stunned. Absolutely stunned that we got Travis Scott, but we did not get The Rock. And I have a theory about this, because it goes back to Bad Blood when we saw The Rock in October. You remember that? When The Rock came out at the end of the show that night, that was the night that Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns, they teamed together against the Bloodline. And The Rock comes out. We hadn't seen The Rock since the Raw after WrestleMania. And there he is. And he's out there with his Brahma Bull belt that he's very proud of over his shoulder. And he just stands there and he gives the cutthroat signal and he leaves. And he's never heard from again until we see him in February when he magically reappears in the weeks leading up to the Elimination Chamber. And he has that very bizarre segment with Cody where he says, "I want your soul." And that became the big story now going into Elimination Chamber in Toronto. What does he mean by that? The Rock wants Cody's soul? This is fucking weird. So then we get to Elimination Chamber and John Cena wins the chamber. He punches his ticket to go to the main event of WrestleMania and challenge for the title of his choosing, which actually, I guess Jey Uso had already made his choice. So he would go to WrestleMania and wrestle for the WWE Championship. And then we got that great segment at the end of the show with Rock. Travis Scott is in the ring and Cena, you know, he nutshots Cody. And we have the trio of them as the show goes off the air. The new, like the Hollywood heels. We have The Rock, we have John Cena, and we have Travis Scott. And I said, you know what? That's a really cool ending. As heel turns go, this will go down as one of the best heel turns and one of the more shocking heel turns that we have ever seen in wrestling. Boy, I can't wait to see how they follow it up. And then, of course, we all saw what happened. We didn't see The Rock. We didn't see John Cena for 2 weeks. Then John Cena shows up, and he's telling us how, you know, he's been having all this pent-up frustration with us for 25 years, and he's just healing on all the fans, right? 2 weeks of that. Until finally we got that great segment with him and Cody in the ring where they actually went back and forth on the microphone. I said, okay, this is more like it. This is what I've been waiting to see. And we didn't see Cena again until SmackDown on Friday night. And I said, well, they must have something big planned for this WrestleMania main event. And surely The Rock will be there. What role will he play? What other cameos might we see? Because we saw what happened last year at WrestleMania. It was fucking their Avengers Endgame. When Cody finished the story and we saw all these different people involved and it was exciting and it was overbooked, but it was a great main event. And I said, I wonder what they have planned for this year. And then to see what they gave us here at the end of this show, I tell you what else surprised me. The fact that we had back-to-back nights of WrestleMania with main events that ended with nutshot finishes. Who approved this? I would like to know. We have back-to-back nights of WrestleMania. The main event last night, we had multiple nut shots. Some say that Paul Heyman's fist is still surgically implanted up Roman Reigns' ass. And then tonight, we have John Cena in the closing moments of this championship match kicking Cody in the balls and then pinning him to win the 17th World Championship. This is how that moment now is going to be remembered. The closing scene of John Cena celebrating his win with Travis Scott and his replica belt standing in the middle of the ring. So what I am convinced of at this point, basically, as far as The Rock is concerned, is The Rock shows up when The Rock wants to show up. When The Rock's fancy is tickled and he decides that he wants to come back because it's fun or because he wants some attention, wants to rub shoulders with somebody like Travis Scott, you know, whatever it may be, he just decides to show up whenever he wants to and then he vanishes. And unfortunately for the creative team in WWE and Triple H and all of them, they're then left to clean up the mess that results from it because they have to accommodate The Rock. Oh, The Rock's going to come back. The Rock's going to show up tonight. The Rock's going to do this. The Rock's going to do that. Oh, great. We get The Rock on the show, right? Who doesn't want The Rock on the show? But then they have to work around it. And if they have plans in place, too bad. Those plans get blown up because The Rock is going to be on the show and The Rock is going to do whatever he wants to do. And that's the way I'm convinced that that's exactly what happened here. We had no Rock at WrestleMania today. He wasn't even mentioned, if at all, this weekend. Played no role in the finish of this match. The whole storyline was who's going to sell their soul to The Rock to be his champion. I need a friend. I need a brother. I don't have a brother, right? That was the whole story with Cody. Now he's got his champion, but there was no Rock on the show tonight. But Travis Scott was there, though. Travis Scott was there. This WrestleMania finish, I'm not sure what they were thinking. This was a horrendous finish to WrestleMania this year. And it really is a damn shame because I enjoyed much of the show. It definitely fell off towards the end there. But the opening matches of the show tonight made up for a lot of what we saw last night on night one. Like, they were kicking ass at the beginning of the show. Those first three matches, like, boom, boom, boom. And I'm like, okay, this is more like it. This now feels more like a WrestleMania. This is what I'm talking about here. Now they're cooking with oil, especially after that opener. And then it kind of steadily went down from there. John Cena got in the ring tonight and had his first singles match at a WrestleMania. Okay, the last time we saw him in a singles match at WrestleMania was against Austin Theory. That was a couple of years ago. And that match was fucking terrible. He had not won a singles match at WrestleMania in 10 years before tonight. He had not won a singles match in WWE for 7 years heading into tonight. What kind of John Cena were we going to get in the main event? He worked a very deliberate style. And part of that, I'm sure, was the fact that he's a heel now. So he has to work as a heel. He's been working as a babyface for the last 20 years. So he had to adjust his style a little bit. What ended up happening was we got a mostly very boring main event tonight. This was a main event where it almost felt like he worked this match in a way where he had a call time. Like, next week he has to be on set somewhere to film his next movie. I don't know. I'm watching this match and I'm like, all right, it's a very basic match, but surely it must be building to something here at the end. Yeah. What it built to was just fucking terrible. And it's a real damn shame that when people look back on this moment that John Cena broke the record and won number 17, it's going to be such a shit ending to this WrestleMania that people are going to be looking back on. It sucks. It's very unfortunate. And I know Triple H wishes that all of the critics and all of the prognosticators out there would, in his words, just fuck off and would just be a fan. Just be a fan. Just shut up and enjoy it. Shut up and enjoy the ride, right? Because you could tell the criticism of the road to WrestleMania this year, it got to him. Because he's not used to it. He's used to getting a lot of effusive praise from so many people. You know, Papa H and all these horrendously just ridiculous and disturbing things, frankly, that people say about him. This was really the first time since he took over as the real head of creative in this company that I think the collective, and not everybody, but I think collectively, he got a lot of shit. You know, he took it on the chin for what was a very mediocre build to WrestleMania this year. And I think that's what you saw this week. There was a lashing out against people because they're not used to it. They're not used to getting that type of criticism. Well, he's going to be getting a lot of criticism, and deservedly so, for the way that main event went and the way that main event ended here on this show tonight. And it is well deserved. And like I said, it's a damn shame because most of the rest of the show I thought was very strong. We had on this show tonight, they opened this show with a triple threat match for the Women's World Championship that was as good as any match at WrestleMania this year on night one or night two. In fact, that's my favorite match of the weekend at WrestleMania. The story was a lot deeper and a lot richer in the main event on night one. So if you want to go by story, sure. And the big Heyman twist at the end, that was done flawlessly. It was great. As a match, you're not going to beat Rhea Ripley, Bianca Belair, and Io Sky in that opening match tonight. I'm sorry. As a match, that was the best match of WrestleMania weekend. And it was a great way to kick off the show. And there was an energy there that just felt like it was missing from night one. And then it just went from there. We had a fatal four-way for the Intercontinental Championship that I thought was great. Randy Orton had his open challenge, which was answered not by someone who I thought it would be, but it was answered by the TNA World Heavyweight Champion, who had a WrestleMania moment that I'm sure he wasn't expecting to have, but he had it tonight, and good for him. Becky Lynch is back. She was the replacement for Bayley in the women's tag team title match. First match back. Not the first time that she's come back and won a championship in her first match back. Let's see if she gets the same criticism that Charlotte Flair gets. What I will say about this night is it really, this entire WrestleMania definitely did not match the quality of the last 2 years. WrestleMania 40, WrestleMania 39, great WrestleManias. WrestleMania 41 will not be among those great WrestleManias. I'm sorry to say. But I will say it's better than the first Las Vegas WrestleMania. I know that's a low bar. It was better than WrestleMania 9. It definitely clears that bar. But as far as this main event tonight and just, again, how it all played out and how they went off the air, I thought it was fucking horrendous. I really did. I thought it was fucking horrendous. It was the worst WrestleMania main event, at least since Roman and Brock at WrestleMania 38. That was night two, I believe. And before that, I don't know how far back you would go, but yeah, not good. Not good. And I did not have an issue with John Cena winning the championship. In fact, my prediction and my hope for the main event tonight was that John Cena would win number 17. I'm not upset that he won number 17. I was hoping he would win number 17, and I am still hopeful if he shows up enough that it could be fun watching a heel John Cena go in there with a babyface Randy Orton, maybe even a Backlash in St. Louis in Orton's backyard in front of his hometown fans, right? That could be fun. A heel champion John Cena defending his title against CM Punk. And if they could do it in Chicago, even better, but probably not going to happen. Money in the Bank is in Los Angeles. SummerSlam is two nights in New Jersey. Either of those events would be the perfect venue, I think, to do that match. That could be a lot of fun. Those are matches that we need to see here in Cena's last year. How do you not have John Cena and Randy Orton? How do you not have John Cena and CM Punk, right? There's a lot more fun, potential fun, and I'm a little hesitant to use that word now because I see what they've done since Cena actually turned heel, but there's potentially a lot of fun to be had with him in this role, working with these different people. Cody's been champion for a year. I think Cody's been a great champion, but he's been champion for a year. There's nothing wrong with Cody losing the title and then struggling and working to get the belt back. As long as at the end of all this, John Cena drops that title back to Cody, because that's how this story should end. It should end with John Cena losing the championship to Cody Rhodes and putting Cody, the face of this current era, over. And the face of the old era does the honors for the face of the current era, whether that's SummerSlam or whenever that is. So hopefully that's how it'll end. And I see the story they were telling in the main event, because there was that moment where Cody had the choice to use the title as a weapon. He opted not to, and that's when Cena nutshotted him and went on to win the title. Like, yes, they were trying to tell that story. But in execution and just in the way that main event was presented, I thought it was hot garbage. And it really did. It brought this WrestleMania down a couple of notches, which is too bad, because night two was a lot better than night one. I don't know what they were thinking. They probably thought it was cinema, because that's what they think this all is. This is all cinema. Well, guess what? Even in the cinema, I've seen some pretty shitty movies. This is your WrestleMania 41 night number two review. It is 4:20. Happy Easter. I am the Solemn Monster. Thank you for hanging out with me here. It is our second night in a row together. So last night, it was Triple H in the ring to open WrestleMania. Tonight, it was Stephanie McMahon. She said the last time WrestleMania was in Las Vegas was for WrestleMania 9. At the time, she was 16 years old. She said that she's at WrestleMania 41 now, and her middle daughter is 16 years old. And she says it's all about family, pyro shot off. Very good. Michael Cole, Pat McAfee, Wade Barrett. For the second night in a row, they were our commentary team. I jinxed it. Okay, well, I'll tell you what. If they don't win the World Series this year, you could blame me. Okay? Just blame me. You could say it's my fault. They open night one with the triple threat match. It's funny, you know, I should say night two, but they ended night one is what I meant to say. They ended night one with a triple threat match. They opened night two with a triple threat match. And those two triple threat matches were the best matches at WrestleMania this year. Tonight, it was for the Women's World Championship with Io Sky defending her title against Rhea Ripley and Bianca Belair. More disrespect for the champion. She entered first. They had the champion enter first here in this match. Bianca Belair comes out, and she gets booed very loudly during her entrance. She was actually booed very loudly all throughout the match, even though she has done nothing wrong. She has done nothing wrong in this feud. The fans are the heels. Remember that. I say it all the time. The fans are the heels. There was a spot, though, in this match where Bianca gave Io three consecutive suplexes, including a delayed vertical at the very end before kipping up to her feet. And the fans couldn't help but applaud that. They had to applaud the athleticism of this woman. Rhea gave Io a razor's edge into Bianca, which was cool. Ripley went to the apron early. She landed a cannonball dive out onto Bianca on the floor. Io then hit Ripley with an Asai moonsault. A little while later, Ripley hoisted up Io and launched, that was where the Razor's Edge spot was. But after that, Ripley put Io in the prism lock, and Bianca was able to break that up. So Io performed a springboard missile dropkick. She's playing to the crowd. Everybody is going nuts for her because everybody loves her. Every time she's like going crazy and she's like waving her arms around at everything. How can you not like this woman? Everybody they always pop for her. So everyone is firmly behind Io at this point, but then she turns around and Bianca Belair pounces this woman into another dimension. She goes up top. She follows up with a 450 splash on Io, which Michael Cole called a shooting star press. And Wade Barrett corrected him and said that it was, in fact, not a shooting star press. So Ripley put Bianca down with her riptide finish and Bianca kicked out. Ripley stood on the second rope after this. And she pulled up Io for a riptide from the middle rope. Io, though, countered out of it, took Rhea all the way down to the mat. She went up for her over the moonsault. Ripley, though, got her feet up as Io flew off. And Io took this great bump. I mean, she got those feet right up in the face. And Io bumped kind of, I can't even describe it, but the way she bumped, it sent her backwards. She kind of stumbled backwards and into the clutches of Bianca, who hoisted her up for a KOD. She had the champion pinned. Ripley, though, broke it up. Crowd popped huge for that sequence, and deservedly so, because it was great. Hey, Darth, have you gotten enough Fiend for this weekend? Fiend. We heard that during the main event, too. Fiend. I'm going to hear that in my sleep. I don't want to ever hear that song again. I've heard it so much. So Bianca yells at Rhea, who was on her knees. And then pie faces her. Ripley fires back. Bianca hits her with a big right hand. Ripley spits in Bianca's face. And then she gets Bianca on the apron. She runs her into the turnbuckle. And Rhea goes to the middle rope. And she pulls Bianca up with her. Bianca fights Ripley. They're fighting up there. Sent her to the floor with a headbutt. Io then went for a poison rana on Rhea. But she stuffed the attempt. She held on to her. And then what she did was she propelled her back up and over. And so Io went face first into the top of the ring post. And it made this great sound. Bianca pulled Rhea down off the ropes onto her shoulders for a KOD. But Rhea landed on her feet. Bianca then avoided a riptide. She floated over. And she whipped Rhea with her braid. And it just makes that great sound. Just like with Liv Morgan in the chamber. It's like a shotgun blast from hell. whips her with the braid, and then she successfully drops her with a KOD. But as Bianca had Ripley pinned, Io hits both women with her over the moonsault. She crushes both women with it. She covers Bianca, and she pins Bianca to retain the women's championship. And just like that, Io Sky remains your women's world champion. I loved how they kept Io out of the shot, too, so you didn't even see that she was coming. She just flew in from out of nowhere. And Bianca, interestingly enough, not Rhea, Bianca is the one who takes the losing fall. She is undefeated at WrestleMania no more, even though she really wasn't undefeated anyway. I mean, she was in a fucking battle royal and she lost, okay? I mean, she wasn't undefeated. But they wanted you to believe that she was undefeated because she didn't lose in a singles match. She had already lost at WrestleMania. That's like saying the Undertaker was in a battle royal at WrestleMania 8 and he lost, but he's undefeated at WrestleMania. No, he's not. No, he's not. But now she's definitely been defeated. Now there can be no debate about this. This was an outstanding opener. I love this match. This match was great. This was one of the best openers, one of the better openers that you will find in WrestleMania history. I'm not going to rank it as the best. I'm not going to say where it ranks among the best. It's among the best openers in WrestleMania history. This match right here could have main evented either night. This could have main evented night one. This could have main evented tonight. I'll tell you what, had they ended the show with this, this show would have been better off for it. I know why they didn't. I'm just saying, though, had you closed the show with this, this would have been quite the way to end WrestleMania on a much higher note than they did. Never a dull moment here. Crowd was super invested. The action, I thought, was great. Never let up. And a very satisfying conclusion. You know, it just checked all the boxes. If there's one thing that surprised me, I was expecting Naomi to make an appearance here. And she didn't show up. There was no... And that's fine. But I thought she would. I thought she would at least show her face. There was no Naomi here. But Bianca didn't win, so she is staying on SmackDown. And she will no doubt continue to be involved in this whole Naomi and Jade story on Friday night. And we'll see if the negative reactions continue for Bianca, because she has been booed consistently now going back to the European tour. During that European tour, it became very apparent that these fans started really booing her, noticeably booing her. And I thought, well, maybe it'll end when they come back to the States. And then it didn't end. And it has just continued from there. And part of it is, well, a couple of reasons for this. First of all, this was a very pro-heel crowd tonight. You heard it in the main event. They were booing Cody. You heard it in this match here. They were booing Bianca. They were cheering for Dominic Mysterio. So call it the WrestleMania effect. Call it the Las Vegas effect. It was just a heel-heavy crowd, whatever you want to call it. That was part of it. But also, Rhea Ripley is insanely over. Rhea Ripley can stand in the middle of the ring and she can nutshot somebody and hit him with a chair and do all kinds of horrible shit. And people will still cheer for this woman and probably fantasize about her doing it to them. She's just insanely over right now. And Io Sky is also very popular. So that's part of it. They love Io. They love Rhea. Bianca's almost like the odd person out here. I'm curious to see if these reactions continue, because if they do... I don't think they're going to have a choice but to, even if it's not in their plans, but to incorporate a heel turn into their plans for Bianca Belair. And I'm here for it. I would love to see a Bianca heel turn and maybe align her and Naomi, but as heels, and let them go on a tear. I don't know if that's the plan or not, but it'd be very interesting to see if that reaction continues for her. But you can't boo this woman for what she did tonight. Bianca was fantastic. All three women in this match, I thought, were fantastic. And this was right up there with that triple threat match from last night. Again, I said it at the beginning, as a match, forget the story and the big twist ending for a second. Just as a match, this was better than the main event last night. If you're really being objective about it, I believe this was the better match. This was the match that I enjoyed more. And I loved the main event last night. But I think this was my favorite match of WrestleMania weekend. So after this, we had Damian Priest and Drew McIntyre. This was a Sin City street fight. McIntyre walked out dressed as Doomslayer, while Kerry King of the band Slayer played Priest out to the ring with a guitar solo. Kerry is out there and he's doing this guitar solo. And I don't know what they did to his guitar signal. Something sounded like it was just getting screwed up. I don't know if he was overmodulated or what it was, but the beginning there sounded a little rough. But then Damian Priest came out. He played him to the ring, and that was very cool. So they were fighting around ringside, and McIntyre got the better of it, and he hit Priest with the steel steps. Someone, they identified him as McIntyre's brother, so I'm going to assume that it was McIntyre's brother, hands him his smartphone. And Drew takes like a selfie over Priest's body, and then he's typing a tweet. I assume a tweet. And then he hands the phone back to his brother. And this motherfucker, let me show this to you here. This is what he posted on his Twitter. And maybe his IG. I didn't check his Instagram, but this was the second year in a row. This is the new annual tradition where Drew McIntyre posts a photo during his match and says, "Bored at work." This time he said, "Still bored at work." This man is a gem. He must be protected. So McIntyre cut off Priest's comeback attempt. He hit a flip dive out over the top. Drew went for a Claymore kick. Priest, though, threw a chair at his face. And it didn't hit him with too much force. So McIntyre no-sold it either that or he wasn't supposed to take the chair. But he did anyway, and they just sort of ignored it. He came back anyway with a standing Claymore instead of a running one. Only got a two count. McIntyre wrapped a chair around Priest's head, and he went for a Claymore. Priest, though, managed to grab him with one arm, still had the chair wrapped around his neck, and he hit a choke slam. And then Priest hit McIntyre with the chair until Drew came back with a spine buster. So Priest was able to avoid an avalanche white noise. He hit McIntyre with a razor's edge, threw a table that was set up in the ring, only got a near fall out of it. McIntyre followed with a Future Shock DDT on top of the ring steps. He had dragged the bottom part of the ring steps into the ring. So he gave him a Future Shock, which he also took, you know, a good drubbing there from that blow when he landed back first. So that didn't work. Later on, Priest tried the Undertaker's old school rope walk spot. McIntyre, though, shoved him off the ropes. They had set two tables up outside the ring earlier in the match that I had forgotten about. So when he shoved him backwards, Priest took this great bump through both tables and crashed through them. McIntyre then placed Priest's head against a chair that was wedged in between the ropes, and then he claymored his face into the chair, a chair-assisted claymore kick. And with that, McIntyre covered him, and he got the pin. This was another really good match. They didn't go too crazy with all the plunder. You know, they had the steps and the chairs and the tables. That was pretty much it. I like the old school spot where Priest went through the two tables because, like I said, enough time had gone by where I had forgotten that those tables were even out there. And Priest got a good amount of offense here, but this should have been a McIntyre win. You know, Drew McIntyre, he needs to be elevated back to the main event. I can appreciate what these guys tried to do. You know, it was a fine mid-card feud, and I like both these guys, but McIntyre needs to be in that top mix. So I think it was more important for him to win this match. Now, you could argue the opposite and say that Priest is still trying to climb the ladder. McIntyre's kind of a made guy already. Priest could have used the win. McIntyre, I think, needed this win more than he did right now for where he's going. So I thought it was the right finish. And hopefully with Priest, you know, he could start to get back some of that momentum that he had on Raw before he got transferred over to SmackDown, because the crowds were going wild for him, and he really felt like, okay, he's really breaking out as a true top guy. And I think he can do that on SmackDown, but the reactions just have not been the same as what they were on Raw. So hopefully he can recapture some of that. After this, we had a fatal four-way match for the Intercontinental Championship. It was Bron Breakker defending the title against Penta, Finn Balor, and Dominic Mysterio. This was Penta's WrestleMania debut, 24 hours after his brother Rey Fénix made his WrestleMania debut. This was Penta's time. Dominic came out. He was wearing a white Rey Mysterio mask for his entrance, and he struggled to pull it off, which Michael Cole thought was hilarious, and he started laughing. Dominic and Balor, they worked together to start. Cole emphasized that Dom was 0-for-3 at WrestleMania, which should have been a sign. Penta hit Dom and Balor with a flip dive. Breaker then came flying out of nowhere with a shoulder tackle off the apron, took out Penta. Back in the ring, Penta dove at Braun, who slammed him, and then Breaker followed with a press slam on Balor. He speared Dom. He had him beat. Balor broke it up. Penta then performed his sacrifice arm breaker to Finn Balor. Penta picked him up and held him up for a second. Breaker then suplexed them both at the same time. So Breaker kipped up. He pointed at Penta in the opposite corner. Breaker went for a spear. Penta moved, and that caused Breaker to crash and burn. So now Carlito suddenly appears. He was there. Came out of the crowd, I guess. So Carlito is at ringside. Dominic hit two of the three amigos. He couldn't get the third one. So Balor came over to help him finish the job on Penta. This crowd was completely pro-Dominic Mysterio. You would never know that this guy was such a heat magnet because these people badly wanted to see this guy win. They were completely in his camp 100% here. And again, say it with me. The fans are the heels. Dom and Balor, they tried to suplex Breaker. He blocked it and suplexed them both. Up top, Breaker hit a Frankensteiner on Balor for a near fall. Dominic dropkicked Balor from behind at this point. And so their little alliance or understanding here was over. And he went for a 619. Balor blocked it. He grabbed Dom's legs. He brought him back inside. He's looking at him like, what the fuck? Leg trip. Now he's putting the boots to him. And he's stomping Dominic until Penta grabs Balor. He hits him with a Penta driver. And Penta had Balor pretty much dead to rights here. Breaker, though, returned to the ring to break it up. Breaker and Dom, they squared off. And Braun ran the ropes. Carlito, though, pulled the top rope down. And so Breaker went sailing out over the top to the floor. Penta then had Dom pinned, but Carlito pulled Penta to ringside. And Carlito cleared off the Spanish announce desk. And he was about to, I think it was the Spanish one. Might have been the English one, but he cleared off the announce desk. And he was about to put him through the table, or pull Penta onto it is what he was going to do. Braun Breaker, though, was on the other announce desk. And Carlito sees this. And so here comes Braun, and he sprints across both tables, and he just destroys Carlito with a spear, causing the announce desk to collapse. And it's not easy to break these announce desks. They're made of some harder material now, metal, I think. They were showing like the construction of the new curved announce desks. I don't know if this is going to be a new thing, the whole curvature. I think they look cool. But I don't know if that was just a WrestleMania thing or if that's the way they're going to be from now on. So it takes a lot to break these announce tables these days. But it broke. I mean, it looked like a disaster area out there by the time this was over. So Breaker gets back into the ring. He spears Penta. Dom drop kicks Breaker from behind. Hits him with a 619. Dominic is cheered as he is going up top. He's going to hit the splash. But here comes Finn Balor. And Balor cuts him off. He was heavily booed. Balor hit Breaker with a sling blade, shotgun dropkick. He goes up top. He hits the coup de grace to Braun Breaker. Goes for the pin, but Dominic interrupts the pin from the top rope with a frog splash onto Balor, and he pins Finn Balor to win the Intercontinental Championship. We were 3 for 3 so far at this point in the show. But that kicked ass. And again, all action, never a dull moment here. Everybody was involved and everybody had a chance to shine. Braun Breaker's in there. He's looking like a badass. Penta was able to shine himself in his WrestleMania debut. And they continued the drama, the story between Balor and Dom, who have been at odds. They've been butting heads now for many months in the Judgment Day. And so him stealing that pin from Balor and winning the championship and effectively taking it away from him and stealing it from him clearly is going to play into this whole Judgment Day story and a very likely split that we'll have soon, which is probably more than overdue in the Judgment Day. But I told you coming into this, I said, this is going to be Dirty Dom's night. I said, he's my guy. He's the guy I was going with. It just felt like it was the right time in this story to make this move. I just wasn't expecting the reaction to be what it was. You would think that this was like a huge babyface win in the main event of WrestleMania. with the reaction that this guy got. Everybody was on their feet. Everybody was cheering and smiling and happy. He got a tremendous reaction. And then as he's leaving, right, he takes the championship and he's walking out and they show replays. When they come back from the replays, he's still like halfway up the ramp. He sprints back down to the ring, like past Balor and everybody. He sprints back down to the ring, dives into the ring to celebrate some more. So I wonder if they gave him the cue like, hey, get back in the ring and go celebrate. And so the fans cheered for him all over again. Bron Breakker is protected from taking the losing fall, which I figured he would be. And that now frees him up to move up the ladder. So I don't know who he works with now, like in the immediate future, in the near term. But it does free him up now to potentially challenge for the world championship, you know, later on in the year. Maybe he wins Money in the Bank, you know. I don't know. I don't know that he needs Money in the Bank. And it doesn't sound like they're going to be doing King of the Ring this year. But it does free him up to do bigger things than just the Intercontinental title. The only thing is, if I had one criticism of what they did here, they did the exact same finish as what we saw in the opener. And actually, this finish worked better here. So I have no issue with them doing this finish here because for this story, it worked. But it was the same exact finish we got in the triple threat match to open the show. But other than that, these two matches here, these are the two best matches on night two. I thought this was great. That is decidedly not great. But Alex, you are great. Thank you for the $25 Brie mode. Good to see Alex with us tonight. Up next was the Open Challenge. Randy Orton was left without a match at WrestleMania this year, his 20th WrestleMania appearance, when Kevin Owens went down with his neck injury. Who would he be facing on this show? Who would step forward to answer the Open Challenge of Randy Orton? Orton gets in the ring, and he says this is his 20th WrestleMania. Whoever his opponent is, they would get their WrestleMania fame, I guess, courtesy of an RKO. And so they waited and waited and teased it. They wanted you to just wait a little bit longer and build up the drama, you know, extra dramatic effect here. Is it going to be Nick Aldis? Is it going to be Solo Sikoa? Is it going to be Rusev? Is it going to be someone else who's about to make their big debut for the company? Did Jeff Cobb fly all the way from Japan after losing to Tanahashi yesterday to be the opponent for Randy Orton? He would have come out to fucking crickets. It's a good thing it wasn't him. No, it wasn't any of these people. It was the TNA World Heavyweight Champion. For the first time in WrestleMania history, the TNA World Heavyweight Champion makes an appearance. Joe Hendry, who got a very good reaction. These people knew who he was. They played his video. They played the song. He comes out. He's got the championship around his waist. Big smile on his face. And he's swaying his hands. He's waving his hands back and forth, swaying. Everybody in the crowd is swaying as he makes his way down to the ring. This was the biggest moment in this man's life. He walks out there. This is his WrestleMania debut. He's out there in front of 60,000, or what they claim is 60,000 people, right? Packed house, fans as far as the eye can see, more fans than he has ever performed in front of his entire life. And he's got the TNA World Heavyweight Championship around his waist. He is there representing TNA. If you don't think that that wasn't the biggest moment of this man's career, you're fooling yourself. He was loving every second of this. He was taking it all in. So the fans, like I said, they were totally with this. Pat McAfee thought the title would be on the line. I don't know why he thought the title would be on the line. That's ridiculous. And so Michael Cole smartened him up and said that it wasn't, which is a good thing given what ended up happening here. This did not last very long. Hendry gets in the ring, and you know what he does with the pose where he turns and he smiles and the Okada zoom on his face. So he did that. Orton went for an RKO right away. I was like, they're not going to do this. I swear to God, I thought it was going to be RKO 1-2-3, but he went for an RKO. Hendry fought him off and he hit a neck breaker. Hendry started stomping on the mat. He's getting the crowd into it. They're clapping. Orton, though, now he was setting up for the choke slam that he does. So he goozles Orton by the neck. And Orton just no-sells this, and he looks down in, like, confusion. Like, what are you doing? What are you attempting to do here? You're not the Undertaker. So then he pokes him in the eye, and Hendry is blinded. Orton then hits a draping DDT. He sets up for an RKO. Hendry blocks it, and he hits a fallaway slam. Hendry then turns, and he does the zoomed-in face again, right? They zoom in on him. He does the face. And then out of nowhere, Randy Orton comes flying in, and he takes this man down with an RKO truly out of nowhere, which was fucking amazing. Like, just the camera shot, the timing of it, the reaction to it was just pitch perfect. It was high comedy is what it was. And he covers Joe Hendry. Thanks for coming. Randy Orton picks up the win. The match itself lasted about as long as Joe Hendry did in the Royal Rumble. Joe Hendry was in the Royal Rumble for about 3.5 minutes. And that's about how long this match went. This match went about 3.5 minutes. I thought they were going to have Orton fly in and finish him off in the first 10 seconds. I legitimately thought they are going to bury the fuck out of this guy. And they're literally going to ring the bell and squash him in 10 seconds for that WrestleMania moment. It's like when the Hart Foundation beat the Bolsheviks, WrestleMania 6. But they didn't do that. They actually gave him some offense here. You cannot say that it was a total squash, because it was. It could have been, but it was not a total squash. You know, what they were going for here, they were going for a WrestleMania moment. This was not a match so much as they were going for the moment. Right, that's what they do. They go for the moments and the memes and the viral video that they can post on social media. WrestleMania moments, right? They talk about this stuff all the time. That's what this was. And what they were trying to do is make the best of a bad situation. Nobody that they would put in the ring with Randy Orton. Nobody. Not even like a Nick Aldis, right, who had been RKO'd twice by this man going back a couple of years. When he ate that first one. Anybody on the current roster, there was no story that was going to be there to support this match in the way that there would have been a story for a Randy Orton Kevin Owens match. You were not going to be able to replicate that. Randy Orton and Kevin Owens were friends. They were allies on TV for a good chunk of the year last year until Orton, you know, got laid out by Owens. And then he got the pile driver. He was out for 4 months. He sat home for 4 months selling that pile driver. Everything was building to the punt kick, which, by the way, we ended up not getting a punt kick at all. I thought he was going to punt Hendry in the head. We didn't get a punt kick. But that was the story. That's what everything was building towards. As soon as Kevin Owens went down with an injury, that was it. There was no more story. So what do? You go for the moment. You try to give people a moment. Because there is no story on 2 weeks' notice. So that's what they did here. And so I didn't have an issue with it. It will end up being one of the more memorable moments of this entire weekend. And Joe Hendry gets his first, you know, WrestleMania appearance. Now, John Alba did tweet this out. He said, multiple TNA sources told me that Joe Hendry was supposed to work a match on the main roster on the Scotland Raw, but plans changed. One told me earlier today about a potential make good coming for him. Well, I would say that he got a pretty good make good here, being able to wrestle Randy Orton, a fucking future Hall of Famer, in his 20th match at a WrestleMania. I'd say that's a pretty good make good. And by the way, I should show you this too. There it is on your screen right now. They have Joe Hendry merch on WWE Shop right now. He actually has a t-shirt. Say his name and he appears with the WrestleMania logo and his own little logo in there. So they have merch for him up on WWE Shop. It's a shirt. I think a hoodie. They have a hoodie up there for him as well. The only thing is, they actually say it may not ship out until May 23rd, which is kind of unfortunate because it's a WrestleMania shirt. So this WrestleMania shirt may not ship out for another month. But if you want to buy it, you can go pick it up right now and place your order. Hopefully he gets a cut of that merch, but we weren't done yet. So again, I had no issue with what they had done up to this point. I know some people are going to look at this and go, oh, they buried him. You couldn't give him more time. No, because that's not what this was supposed to be. This was not meant to be a 10-minute competitive wrestling match. What don't you understand about that? And I'll be honest with you too. If you are a diehard TNA fan, I haven't looked at the forums or anything like that, but I'm going to assume that the real TNA fans, the real diehard TNA fans, they're not going to see this as a burial either. They're going to see it for what it is. And they'll probably be happy for Joe Hendry. Because they recognize, you know, what this really was supposed to be. This was not a burial up to this point. We weren't done yet. So Orton helps Hendry to his feet, and he raises his arm, poses for the crowd on one side, raises his arm and poses for the crowd on another side, and then he drops him with a second RKO. He dropped this fucking guy twice with an RKO, and then Orton mockingly turned to do the Joe Hendry pose. Instead, he did his own Randy Orton douche pose that he does, and the camera zoomed in, and he had a good laugh. And it was funny. It was hilarious, but when I saw that, when I saw the second RKO, and then I saw the zoomed in mocking shot, I was like, man, they did my man dirty here with that second RKO. They could have left well enough alone, but man, they did my guy dirty here. Hit him with the second RKO and stole the man's pose. They didn't have to do him like that. He'll be okay though. I think he's going to be fine. This week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. When you're hungry and you want to go out to dinner, you want to have options, right? Maybe you're in the mood for Chinese or Italian, maybe Japanese food or Indian food, whatever it may be. You have options. Now imagine if you could only get food from one country, one cuisine. That wouldn't be so fun, would it? I love Chinese food, but I don't want to eat it every day. I would be 400 pounds. That's what it's like to use Netflix without ExpressVPN. You only get to watch content from a single country. Where's the fun in that? See, Netflix hides content from you based on your location. ExpressVPN allows you to change your online location so you can control where Netflix thinks you're located. They have servers in over 100 countries, so you can access thousands of new shows and movies and never run out of stuff to watch. And it doesn't just work with Netflix. It works with other streaming services too, like Disney Plus. ExpressVPN is the best VPN because not only is it secure, it's easy to use. Just tap the app and click one button to change your location. It also works on all of your devices, including phones, laptops, tablets, and smart TVs. You get super fast speed so you can stream in HD without buffering, like you're watching something in 360p. We've all been there before. I don't want to sit here watching a pixelated image. There's a reason why ExpressVPN is ranked number one by top tech reviewers like CNET and The Verge, because it just works. I'll give you an example of something I watched or rewatched recently because it came up on one of my live streams. I was interacting with some folks in the chat and The Shawshank Redemption came up. One of the greatest films ever made. And it's not even available on Netflix in the US right now. But you know where you can stream it on Netflix right now? In Australia and Italy and Japan. So guess what I did? I traveled, sort of, to Japan for the first time by connecting to a server in Tokyo, and I was able to watch the movie, glitch-free, no issues at all. It was a show I recently watched. I only got through a couple of episodes. I may go back to it. But it was a TV series called Hannibal, with Lawrence Fishburne, about Hannibal Lecter and his relationship with a profiler who works for the FBI. Interesting stuff. Didn't even know about it. It's from, like, 2013. It's not on US Netflix. So I had to connect to a UK server to be able to see it. Again, it's very simple. I just opened the ExpressVPN app, selected the country I wanted, tapped one button. You have to refresh Netflix, but after you do that, there it is. It's just there. I love it. So be smart. Stop paying full price for streaming services and only getting access to a fraction of their content. Get your money's worth at expressvpn.com/solomonster. Don't forget to use my link at expressvpn.com/solomonster to get an extra 4 months of ExpressVPN for free. We had AJ Styles in the very next match here. One-on-one with Logan Paul. By the way, shout out to the 4100+ who are hanging out with me here on a Sunday night as we wrap up WrestleMania Night 2. AJ Styles against Logan Paul. Logan held a drone camera in the ring, and he brought it to ringside. The match begins. I had high hopes for this match, just given the talent involved here. Logan Paul, great athlete. Logan Paul's had some great matches. AJ Styles has had a career of great matches. Not too many of them have come at WrestleMania. And I was really hoping that, I don't know how many more WrestleMania matches he even has. I was hoping that with Logan Paul as his opponent, they would go out there and have a kick-ass match. Kick-ass is not a word I would use to describe this match. It was not a bad match, but it will not go down as a great WrestleMania match either. I was kind of underwhelmed by this match. But
it's the amazing Goonthar.
Oh, King Nader is back.
Jerry Lawler loves Goonthar the Magnificent. All hail Goonthar.
Hey, King Nader. What's going on, man? King Nader was here with us last night.
I have one pair of skinny jeans, and I'm going to wear them every week just to piss you off.
Big Dave, wearing those skinny jeans. Yeah, you know, unfortunately, this is the point in the show where things did start to fall off. All those kick-ass matches I talked about at the beginning of the show, like, they were firing those first three matches, man, like three in a row. And then we had the open challenge, which was a fun moment, and then it just started to taper off. But here, Logan tried a slingshot dive with AJ at ringside. Styles, though, trapped him in the ring skirt, started firing away at him. Styles also drove him into the barricade right where Nick Khan was sitting with his son. We'll get back to Nick Khan here in a little bit. So Logan gained the advantage by shoving AJ into the ring post, and then he grabbed the drone camera, which was sitting on top of the Prime hydration station. Are you tired, by the way, after this weekend of all of these sponsors that were plastered all over the ringside area? We had the Prime hydration station. They were showing us tonight. What was the guy in the mascot costume? Minute Maid, right? The Minute Maid mascot. They kept going back to the Minute Maid mascot. Of course, they had all the logos on the mat. They had the logos on the turnbuckles. They had logos up on, I mean, you can't escape it. Like, it's all over the place. I mean, they're probably making money on all this shit hand over fist. I know why they're doing it, but it's like sensory overload with all of this shit. It's unbelievable. So yes, the drone was sitting over by the Prime hydration station, and he sent it into the air. And so we went with the drone shot footage, which was terrible quality. And they stuck with it for like fucking 90 seconds. I'm like, can we go back to the regular feed, please? I'm watching WrestleMania on a fucking drone as he's beating up AJ Styles. Styles came back with a quick flurry, including a fireman's carry neckbreaker, sliding forearm, and a brain buster for two. AJ set up for the phenomenal forearm. Paul grabbed him off the ropes, then hit a rolling senton and a lion salt for a two count. That's right, the general, yes. Well, the general was one of the sponsors. They had the general insurance logo on the mat. Not the ring general who lost to the Yeet Man last night at WrestleMania. So Logan avoided a Styles clash. He hit a buckshot lariat, which I believe Pat McAfee referred to it as the buckshot lariat on commentary. Styles ducked a right hand and hit a rack bomb for a two count. AJ went for a springboard 450. Logan got the knees up and hit a Styles clash. AJ, though, rolls right through it after he hits it, but he rolls through it and he gets Logan up for a Styles clash of his own. And now both men are down. He basically no-sold his own finish, which I guess he's allowed to do because it's his move. Or should I say Michelle McCool's move? That'll piss some people off. But so he basically no-sold his own move there. So at that point, we see Logan's friend Jeff. Now, I don't know who this guy is. We are told that he's a friend of Logan's. We've seen him in multiple matches. He's the guy who's always like trying to pass the brass knucks to him, like over the barricade. Only this time, Jeff, apparently security is okay with this guy, Jeff, lurking around ringside. And he's kind of crouched down so the referee doesn't see him. And you can see that he's got the brass knucks and he's waiting for the right moment to pass the knucks over to Logan. And he tries to do so, but before he can, Karrion Kross appears and he grabs them away from him. Now, we always saw at first was a hand come in. And then the camera panned back and we see Karrion Kross. And when they showed Karrion Kross, the people popped. That was the biggest pop I think he's ever gotten in all the years he's been in WWE. Now, granted, he's been a heel pretty much his entire run there, but the fans actually reacted. They popped for Karrion Kross. They were happy to see him. And so he stops Jeff from passing the brass knucks into the ring, and AJ comes outside. He throws Jeff aside over into the barricade. And so now we have Kross talking to AJ, and he is pleading with AJ, calling him Alan. Please, Alan, use the Nux. He wants him to embrace the dark side. Use the Nux. AJ throws the Nux aside. He punches Kross in the face. And you could hear boos. You could hear some boos for that. AJ's going to do it the fair way. He ended up falling victim to the same thing that John Cena did at the end, or Cody Rhodes did at the end of the show. You know, if you're a young kid watching WWE, now that I think about it, as I sit here and I'm going through this, like it sends a horrible message to any little kid watching this show who wants to do the right thing. And they're taught for their entire life that if you want to win and you want to do good, you got to do it the right way, right? You don't cheat. You don't take shortcuts. You don't take a back step, right? You do it the right way. The fair fight, right? AJ Styles opted not to use the brass knucks, and he threw them away. And in the end, it cost him, because he goes back up on the apron, and he's going to go for the phenomenal forearm. Logan, though, ducks it, and then he nails him with that loaded fist, and then he follows that with a pulverizer, and he pins AJ Styles. And what did we see in the main event? Cody Rhodes had a choice to make. He was going to fight fair. He got kicked in the dick, and he lost his title. So remember that, kids. If you fight fair, okay, you're a loser. Losers fight fair. If you want to win, you got to cheat. And as Al Bundy used to say, it's only cheating if you get caught. That's the message coming out of WrestleMania 41 this year. It was actually a very, very much a heel WrestleMania. We had, I think for the first time since WrestleMania went to the two-night format, we had back-to-back nights with the heels going over in the main event. I don't believe that's ever happened before. So again, all you little kids out there, I'm just saying, learn from this. They say don't try this at home, right? Whenever you tune into WWE, but I'm just saying, you apply that in your life, you learned a very valuable lesson tonight. I thought it was cool to see Kross get a pop, because I wasn't expecting that. I didn't even know he was going to be there. And so it looks like his story with AJ is going to continue instead of him just kind of disappearing into the void, which is what I thought might happen. Like, okay, he had his little story with AJ, and then he's going to go away and we're not going to see him again for 6 months. But it looks like his story with AJ is going to continue, which is cool. I thought this match had the potential to be so much more than it was. And when it was over, again, I'm not going to say it was a bad match. Like, the work itself was fine. It was just boring. And the crowd was very quiet for it. It was like the come down match. At no point did, you know, it feel like they were fully invested in this match. But I'm not surprised, because look at the build. It was very basic, very pedestrian. You had AJ calling him out at Madison Square Garden. 3 weeks later, Logan calls him out. It was a very, very generic build to this match. And the fans treated it like a very generic match. And unfortunately, AJ Styles suffers a loss here. And it's not a WrestleMania match for him that I think a lot of people are going to really remember much about. I don't know how this happened. This match went almost 18 minutes. And I realized at this point that outside of the main event last night, outside of the two main events, I do believe this match here was the longest WrestleMania match of either night, outside of the two main events. I don't know how the hell that happened. I guess Logan was able, yeah, they want Logan Paul to have plenty of time to do his thing. There was no reason for this to go 18 minutes. This went longer than the women's triple threat match. This went longer than the Fatal 4-Way match, I believe. That's crazy. That is crazy. Then we have the women's tag team titles. Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez, they walk in as the champions. They defend their titles here against Lyra Valkyria and a mystery partner. Now, why a mystery partner? Because It was supposed to be Bayley and Lyra. Bayley and Lyra, they won a gauntlet match on SmackDown last week to earn the right to challenge for these titles. On the kickoff show yesterday, they shot an angle where Bayley was attacked off camera. We saw her laying there by a mystery attacker. She was holding her shoulder. We don't know who. We don't know what happened or how it happened. Adam Pearce is on the scene, and he tells Lyra, it appears that Bayley is out of WrestleMania. She hadn't even been evaluated yet. They've already made a medical decision that she's not going to be cleared in time for WrestleMania. And she gave Lyra 24 hours to find herself a partner to replace Bayley. So we had two mystery person angles on this show, one with Randy Orton and one here in this tag team match. And so enter Becky Lynch, who we have not seen in almost a year. The last time we saw Becky Lynch was on Raw last year when she lost to Liv Morgan in a steel cage match. And apparently she's been waiting to come back for a while. They've just been waiting to figure out creative. They just could not decide on a creative idea for her to come back until now. And this was the idea that they came up with, which brings me back to Bayley. Is Bayley really hurt? No, she's not. This is all angle. And apparently they knew at least a few weeks in advance what the plan was. Now, I don't know how far in advance Bayley knew. Even if Bayley knew 2 or 3 weeks ago, it's still pretty fucked up. You know, that she's advertised for a WrestleMania match and then gets pulled from the show, even if she was not really, you know, intended for this spot in the first place. But she gets pulled from the show, and she wasn't even on the show. She wasn't in their corner. Like, she just wasn't seen at all. Totally off the show, but she's 100% healthy. There's nothing wrong. That's pretty fucked up. I do feel bad for her. But Becky gets her spot, and so they kick things off here. And the heels very quickly take control. Liv shoves Lyra off the top into a big boot by Raquel. Lyra almost made a hot tag. Morgan, though, yanked Becky off the apron.
Off is a direction you can fuck.
That's my message to Triple H after that main event tonight. Since The Rock couldn't be here to say it himself, I'll say it for him. I don't know where he is, but he was not in Las Vegas tonight. Thank you, brother. Anyway, Becky, she is reaching for the tag. And the way this was shot at first, I thought that she pulled her hand away from Lyra and was turning heel. I didn't notice at first. And then they cut and they could, yeah, you could see that Liv pulled her off the apron. But at first I'm like, oh shit, what's going on here? Becky did eventually make the hot tag though. She gave Raquel a molly go round before hitting Liv with a fall away slam. Becky put Morgan in a disarm her. Rodriguez, though, broke it up with a boot to the face. Morgan hit Becky with Oblivion, but Lyra broke up the cover. And after Lyra took out Raquel outside the ring with a tornado DDT on the floor, Becky hit Morgan with a manhandle slam, and she pinned Liv Morgan. She got her revenge for the cage match last year, because Liv's been gloating ever since that she retired Becky Lynch. So this was Becky's revenge. Becky Lynch and Lyra Valkyria are the new women's tag team champions. Michael Cole is on commentary already calling her Lyra Two Belts, because I can't think of a less original thing to come up with. Gee, I wonder where he got that from. We go from Becky Two Belts to Lyra Two Belts. She is now one half of the women's tag team champions and the women's intercontinental champion. That I was not expecting. Now, had they gone through with the original plan in kayfabe, what the original plan was, I wasn't expecting a title change here. But with Becky in there, were they really going to bring Becky back and have her lose? Unless she was going to turn heel. That would have made no sense for her to come back after almost a year away against the woman who, quote unquote, retired her and then lose. So you had to know, as soon as she came out here, they're probably winning the tag team titles. And sure enough, that's what happened. Now, they had an average match. The crowd was not as up for this match as you would think, given how big of a name Becky is. And maybe she's not at the peak of when she was at her hottest in 2018, hottest as an act. We're talking 2018, 2019. It's been a while, but still, she's a major name. We haven't seen her in a long time. She got a great reaction coming out. The match itself, though, was just kind of like, eh. And that's kind of how the crowd was. Eh. You know, but they were happy to see them win the titles. Lyra was obviously ecstatic to have two championships. This is not the first time that Becky Lynch has come back, her first match back, and won a championship. And so for all the people who want to throw shade at Charlotte Flair, and hey, rightfully so in some cases perhaps, but you want to throw shade at Charlotte and crack jokes and everything, you got to be fair about it here. Not the first time that we've seen this with Becky Lynch. She comes back and all of a sudden she's got gold around her waist. I just hope they have a good story to support it. And I hope Bayley gets a good spot in this and is going to be a part of this story as well, because she really got the shaft here. So the question is, does Bayley go heel? Does Becky ultimately go heel and then work a program for the IC title with Lyra? Which I think would not be a bad idea. It would not be a bad idea for her to win the IC title and work a longer program with Lyra and then put her over at the end. I wouldn't even mind that necessarily. It feels more like if anyone's going to go heel, it's probably going to be Bayley. And if she does, I hope she gets a hell of a run. Because after this, I can understand why people would be upset. Yeah, that she got jobbed out here by not being a part of this. So then we get to... Now nobody, as far as I know, got injured or seriously injured. So I can laugh about this. Let's talk about this segment. I didn't know if he might make a cameo appearance in the main event. But then the glass shattered. And out comes Stone Cold Steve Austin. And I said, well, I guess we're not going to see him in the main event. If he's coming out here, we're not going to see him in the main event. But I was happy to see Stone Cold. I hear the music and he makes a cameo here on this show. He was at the Hall of Fame. And he was out there last night when they had the Hall of Famers on stage. And I didn't see it at first. I saw it after the fact, so I didn't mention this in my review. But I went back and I watched it when all the Hall of Famers except Lex Luger were on stage and Triple H comes out. And he's shaking hands with each of the inductees. After he shook Bret Hart's hand, Bret had this just priceless look on his face. Like he shakes his hand and then he's looking at someone like in the other direction. He's just like, he just makes this, like, you could just tell, like, the contempt that he still has deep down. And maybe not even so much deep down for Triple H. Like, he doesn't much care for Triple H. And you could understand why. He was the mastermind of the screw job. It was his idea. I don't think he's ever forgot that. That was funny to me. Bret knows how to hold a grudge. I will say that. But Austin was back here for the third time this weekend. And he drove out on an ATV. Not the first time he's done this at WrestleMania. He drove out in an ATV for the segment with Kevin Owens a few years ago before they had the match. Now, the ramp was kind of narrow. And I'm like, I don't know how many beers he's had so far tonight, but hopefully he can just, you know, drive in a straight line. So he safely made it all the way down the ramp. And he is driving his ATV at a high rate of speed around the ring. And he does one lap around the ring. And so he's coming around the bend again. And Michael Cole on commentary is talking about how, you know, nervous he gets when he sees, you know, Austin out here driving like this. And you can understand why. As he's turning the corner around one of the posts, he crashes into the fucking LED barricade. Like right into the front row. He didn't crash into the front row, but like he crashes into the wall. And I don't know if he was stuck. Like the wheel was, I don't know, but he crashes into the wall and there's a woman, and I watched this back, okay? He didn't like hit the woman. There was a woman who was, I think, standing there, and I guess the impact, it was almost like a delayed impact or a delayed reaction, and she just sort of very slowly just kind of fell back into her chair. It wasn't like the fucking impact knocked her down on the ground, but she falls back into her chair. And she has this look on her face like she's shocked and appalled. Like she's angry. And Austin obviously said something, probably apologized to her. Didn't matter. Like she still had this fucking pissed off look on her face. So Austin just leaves the ATV. I really think maybe the wheel was stuck or something. You couldn't move it. So he just gets off the ATV and gets into the ring to do his segment. But yeah, this woman was, she was not happy. She did not look happy at all. And in fact, Nick Khan later on, he went over. He was in a different section. Nick Khan came over to go talk to this woman. Of course he did. Because he's like, oh my God, like This is a lawsuit waiting to happen here. Let me go check on this woman and make sure everything's okay. Maybe we'll give her tickets to fucking Backlash or something. We'll give her a Joe Hendry t-shirt. Anyway, Austin gets in the ring. And he's here to announce the attendance. Because last night it was Shawn Michaels who came out to announce the attendance. So they send Austin out there. And he's going to announce that it's another sold-out crowd, he said. See, I'm intrigued by this because they announced an attendance number of a few thousand less last night, and they claimed that was sold out. So you're in the same building two nights in a row. You were sold out last night. I think they said 61,000. Was that the number? But tonight they had 63,226 and they were sold out. Like, they can't even get their own story straight here. So he said, I'm not sure if that number looks right. Looks like there's more people than that in this building. And he starts counting. He's looking into the crowd. He goes, 1, 2, 3. He gets all the way up to 18. And then he stops and says, ah, it's bullshit. Yeah, these numbers are bullshit. So then he announced a combined two-night attendance total of 124,693 solid-ass cats here in Las Vegas. Now, I was wondering about that because, you know, he was at WrestleMania all weekend. And so I'm wondering who's watching Pancho and Macho back at the Broken Skull Ranch. He's got two solid-ass cats. See, I wouldn't want to be away from them for more than maybe a day or two. But anyway, so Austin drank some more beers. I have a feeling he drank some before he drove out there. And he made his way to the back. That's why I said at the beginning of the review, I'm not sure what's worse, Austin's driving tonight or Triple H's booking in that main event. I'm not sure. I might go with Triple H on this. But that brings us to the aforementioned main event, which was John Cena in his final WrestleMania match, trying to win a record-setting number 17, going up against Cody Rhodes for the undisputed WWE Championship. John Cena had not won a singles match before tonight in 7 years. He had not won a singles match at WrestleMania, they said, in 10 years. Yet here he is in the main event, one last shot. This is it. It all comes down to this. It's do or die. Cena walks out first, and he enters. They actually darken the lights a little bit. It wasn't like Undertaker dark, but they darkened some of the lights. It wasn't as bright. And all you saw on the screens and on the LED ramp was nothing but his name. It just said John Cena in very basic white lettering. And even his gear was dark. It was black. So stripped away all of the colors and just all of the glitz and glamour. This is what he was going for here with this heel entrance, which was a nice touch. So then we have Cody's entrance, and this puzzled me. And maybe somebody can shed some light on this for me. They had several dirt bikes just driving back and forth across the stage. And then Cody walked out. What is the significance of the dirt bikes? When have we ever seen Cody either come out on a dirt bike or be associated with a dirt bike? I don't get it. I don't understand it. Then he walks out there. He's got the skull mask that he was wearing last year. And it opens. Like, it opens to reveal his face. Like a toy. And that was it. As far as, like, WrestleMania main event entrances go, these were pretty fucking lame. I have to say, these were very lame. Much like the main event itself was. So both men got noticeable boos when Alicia Taylor was doing the in-ring introductions. Cena got booed. Cody got booed. Everybody gets booed. It's a heel crowd. That's what they do. They just hate on everybody. But it was very noticeable, the boos that Cody was getting here tonight. They rang the bell. I will say this, you know, when they rang the bell and the match started, it did have that big fight feel. Like, there was a buzz and an energy in the crowd. Like, it felt like, okay, it's go time. It's main event time. That energy level, by the way, that would be the peak. That was the peak of the energy level here in this match. At least my energy level. My energy bar was depleting the longer this thing went here. And so this match here that has been built up for weeks and weeks, John Cena, all the horrible things that he has said about Cody Rhodes, the angle at Elimination Chamber in Toronto, where he kicked this man in the balls, he embarrassed him in front of the world, he bloodied him, he left him bloody in the middle of the ring. And how does this match start? With a collar and elbow tie-up. With a collar and elbow tie-up, that's how. So Cody shoulder tackled Cena out of the ring, and they booed. They kept the pace very slow at the beginning of this match, and I figure they were building to a big crescendo here as the match went on. No, not really. That was basically the pace of the entire match. Cody dropkicked Cena out of the ring, and again, Cena had to regroup on the outside. So Cody launched himself out onto him with a suicide dive. He put him back inside. Cena went on the offensive at this point. The reaction was mixed. Slingshot to Cody, throat first, under the bottom rope. So he booted Cody in the face, and he turned him inside out with back-to-back clotheslines. Cena was out there. This is John Cena. And so if you know anything about John Cena matches, then you know that he talks a lot. He calls spots very loudly in his matches. What I will say here about this one, Cody was having a conversation with Cena, or maybe I should say Cena was having a conversation with Cody, but there was a lot of talking going on here in the middle of this match here. And he gave Cody a sidewalk slam for a two count. Then came a double axe handle off the middle rope by John Cena. Oh, he went aerial. He went to the middle rope. We haven't seen that in a while. Double axe handle off the middle rope. Then he goes over to another corner, another double axe handle. He borrowed from the Ultimate Warrior's playbook at WrestleMania 6. At least the Warrior went up to the top rope. Cena went up to the middle rope. But that's what Warrior did in his match with Hogan when the referee got bumped, right? Double axe handle here, double axe handle there. He went for a third one, and Cody kicked him in the gut. Cody fought back, but Cena poked him in the eye, and he got cheered. And again, I keep saying it, these fans are heels. I'm going to put it on a fucking t-shirt. The fans are heels. Fans are the heels. So Cena busted out a tornado DDT off the ropes. That was honestly the biggest move he did in the entire match. I wasn't expecting that. So a tornado DDT, only got a two count. He hit one shoulder tackle off the ropes. Usually he goes for like two or three in a row. He'll drop the opponent. He'll do the you can't see me, right? That's his... R-Truth, I mean, stole all of his moves, right? We see it all the time from him. So he hit one shoulder tackle off the ropes, and then another, and then he dropped Cody. All of his signature spots, but he paused in between each one. It was like he was doing them in slow motion. He was doing a lot of things in slow motion, but he was doing this intentionally in slow motion here. So he went for the five-knuckle shuffle. Cody poked him in the eye, and the fans booed. Disaster kick connects. Now Cody is firing up. More boos. Cody Cutter connects. Cena kicks out at two. Cena comes back with an attitude adjustment. He covers him. Cody kicks out. Today's episode is sponsored by Hims. To all the men out there within the sound of my voice, if you're starting to notice your hair thinning, you need to know there are lots of other men out there going through the exact same thing. And you may feel like there's nothing you can do about it. But that's because you haven't tried Hims Hair Loss Solutions. With Hims, you could avoid jumping through a bunch of flaming hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving home. You don't even have to put pants on. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple, with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple. It is 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. There's no waiting rooms. There's no sitting there feeling like you've got eyes on you. This takes all of that stress out of the process. Just answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too, with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/solomonster. That's hims.com/solomonster for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/solomonster. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information. So now Cena does the "you can see me," hits the five knuckle shuffle. Another AA he's going for, but Cody slips out and he rolls him up for a two count. Cody goes up and Cena crotches him on the top rope. Cena now goes up to the middle rope and he places Cody on his shoulders. He is going to go for an avalanche attitude adjustment. And he does it. He connects with the avalanche attitude adjustment. He covers. Here comes the 17th world title. Cody kicks out. And so now panic is setting in for John Cena. He's got a look on his face, very frustrated. What do I have to do to beat this guy? So he heads up to the top rope. Now he goes to the top. Now we're talking. And he goes for his leaping leg drop off the top rope. Cody, though, turns it into a power bomb for a near fall. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I do believe in the SummerSlam match, I want to say 2008, that Cena had with Batista, right? That was the move where they credited the neck injury that Cena had. I think it was off that move, right? It was like a top rope counter into a power bomb by Batista, even though that Cena was already injured. But I think they credited it to that move. So they did the same spot here in this match. Only got a near fall. Cody runs the ropes, and he jumps off for a Cody cutter, and he covers. Cena kicks out. So now Cody sets up for Crossroads. Cena, though, slips out and then hits a third attitude adjustment. And now comes the STF. Actually, Michael Cole called it the STFU, which I don't believe Cena has called it that since, what, the Thugonomics days? So he called it the STFU. Cody almost gets the ropes. Cena, though, drags him back to the center of the ring. And he locks it back on. Cody again is inching his way to the ropes. Cena drags him back again, but Cody kicks him away. And Cena, in the process, he crushes the referee in the corner, referee Chad Patton. And I say crushes, not really. I mean, it really, there wasn't a lot of impact here, but the referee still has to sell it. So he goes down. Cody hits Crossroads. Cena is down. Cody covers him, but there's no referee. So he gets the visual pin. There is no ref. Cena then goes over and he pulls off one of the top turnbucle pads in the corner. And he sends Cody headfirst into the turnbuckle, the exposed buckle, sends him into it a second time. And then he hits another attitude adjustment. That was the fourth one. The fourth attitude adjustment of this match. See, now you can tell one of the things that I absolutely hated about the second Rock Cena match was the fact that we had so much finisher spam between them. Now, we get finisher spam all the time now in wrestling. We had it even in the main event last night, but the difference is that was a much better match. That was a much more exciting match. I can ignore it to a degree if there's a great match that I'm watching here and they go a little overboard with it. But when you have a match that's fucking boring and you're just constantly relying on the finishers and the finisher spam over and over and over again, it just gets very old. And I think you tend to notice it more. I think you're willing to let more go if you're really like into the rest of the match and you're enjoying it. But if you're in the middle of a match that's just very meh or very dull, you're definitely going to notice it more. And I think it's going to bother you more. And that, I think that was what was going on here with me, because it's like, okay, fourth one, Cody kicks out. So now at this point in the match, we hear Fiend in the middle of this match. And John Cena is sitting in the ring. And so here comes Travis Scott with his replica belt that he had with him at Elimination Chamber. And Cena is smiling. And Travis Scott slowly, and actually there he is. We got a super chat here from Travis Scott. Travis Scott slowly, and I do mean slowly, begins to make his way down to the ring. Now, this is not the longest ramp they've ever had for WrestleMania. It was actually on the shorter side compared to some of the ones they've had, but it's still a long ramp. And they're in the middle of this main event match here, and he's taking his sweet time coming down. I'm looking at the clock. I'm looking at my watch. I'm like, okay.
I have the best moveset.
Yeah. Can we get the show on the road here? So he makes his way down. Cena reaches down. He actually helps him up like he was a little kid. He pulls him up onto the apron, and he raises Travis Scott's arm. And Cena holds Cody for Scott to take a shot. Cody fights him off, though, and Scott drops down off the apron to the floor. Crossroads to John Cena. And so Travis Scott now pulls the referee out of the ring when Cody goes for the pin. So now the referee is out on the outside. Now he's down again. Cody is now inviting Travis Scott to get into the ring. And this is where I started to get very irritated. Because I was still like, okay, The Rock is probably going to show up, or you know, maybe somebody else will show up. We'll see what kind of nonsense we get here. And I'm sitting here at this moment. I'm like, wait a minute. I was one of the people who kind of defended the move as far as Travis Scott at the Elimination Chamber when everybody was shitting on it. I'm like, all right, you know what? He's got a name. They just wanted him to be present for it. Like, it's not a big deal. Now I'm watching this WrestleMania main event, and now Travis Scott is the only one out there, and he's involved in the middle of this pretty significant, you know, historically significant championship match here at WrestleMania. I'm like, what are we doing here? Like, is there more to this that's yet to come? Like, there has to be, right? Fucking Travis Scott is in the middle of this match here. Like, what are we doing here? So I'm like, okay, maybe he's going to get his receipt, you know, for what he did to Cody at the chamber. So he's inviting Travis Scott to get into the ring. And so he does. Climbs the ring steps, jumps over the top rope. Now he's in the ring and he's face to face with Cody. And Cody dared him. He goes, I dare you to do it. I dare you. Travis Scott is about to get his receipt from Cody Rhodes. He stops him when he takes a shot, and then he delivers a crossroads to Travis Scott. And to be fair, he took a pretty good crossroads. Obviously, it wasn't really a receipt for what he did to him. He busted his fucking eardrum, gave him a black eye. But he lays out Travis Scott, and he took the bump fine. Nothing wrong with that. Cody, though, doesn't see John Cena with the WWE Championship. And he tries to hit Cody with it. They wrestle for it. They're playing tug of war with the belt. I was having flashbacks here to Roman and Brock. I'm like, oh, God, another tug of war with the belt. But Cody ends up getting possession of the title. And Cena begins to beg off because now he's a heel. And so John Cena has to do the one thing that we are not used to seeing John Cena do. We never used to see John Cena begging off. He's begging off. He's like, don't, please, please don't. Please don't. And Cody is standing there and he is conflicted. And Michael Cole is trying to tell the story and really dumb it down and break it down for us in terms that everybody can understand on commentary about what John Cena has told Cody about how, you know, are you willing to do what it takes? Are you're going to be the good guy or are you going to be the bad guy? And Cody cannot bring himself to use this championship belt. And at that moment, when Cena realizes that Cody has made the choice that he's not going to use the title, John Cena kicks him in the dick. He delivers a low blow. And so down goes Cody Rhodes. Cody now gets back up to his feet. And Cena blasts him in the head with the WWE title. He calls over for Chad Patton, the referee, to get back in the ring. Cena covers Cody. And I'm thinking, there's no way. There's no way they're going to end this match like this. There's just no way. He crawls in, he counts one, he counts two, and he counts three. And that is how John Cena becomes a record-breaking 17-time world champion. He kicks Cody in the dick, he hits him in the head with the belt, and he pins him. And that's your WrestleMania main event. We had Travis Scott. We had a dick kick for the third time in as many matches in the WrestleMania main event this weekend. and then a belt shot. And just like that, Cody's one-year run as WWE champion. He finished the story last year, right? He's had this one-year run as champion has now come to an end. And John Cena is once again on top of the mountain. And Cena invites Travis Scott to get back into the ring, raises his arm, and Travis Scott is celebrating with John Cena. And Cena's like, hold your belt up, because he still has his replica belt there. And they're both posing with their respective championships in the middle of the ring. And that is how they went off the air. That is honestly how WrestleMania 41 went off the air. I have no issue with John Cena being WWE champion and breaking the record and getting one more run with the title as a heel. Like I said earlier, I think there's great potential to have some fun with this. If he's going to go in there and have matches with Randy Orton and CM Punk and all these people, I would rather the dynamic be him as a heel and them as a babyface. I think it makes it more fun. I would like to see that. I have no problem with that. What I have a problem with is the way that they went about doing it. This was completely underwhelming. This was as underwhelming a WrestleMania main event finish as we have had in years. And for such a historic moment, you would think that they had something more planned. I thought there was a possibility they might try to tie in the main event ending last night with this. And now you're getting into fantasy booking territory, and I understand it. I'm not going to hold that against them. You know, some idea that I came up with, and they didn't go with the idea, and I talked it into my... It's not even about that. I was waiting for something to happen here, and nothing did. The match itself wasn't great. It wasn't terrible. Believe me, I've seen worse WrestleMania main events before. John Cena, what he gave us tonight is about as good as he can give us. The biggest thing he did the top rope leg drop that got countered into a powerbomb. That's probably the biggest move I've seen him do in years. You're going to get what you get now from John Cena. You know, it's his last year. He's older now. He was never the most, you know, technically gifted performer to begin with. What you see is what you get with John Cena. What we saw tonight is as good as you could possibly expect to get. So that's why in the future, when it comes to matches with a Punk or an Orton, a lot of it is going to come down to, honestly, the atmosphere. Where are they? The fans? How loud are they and invested are they in the match? It'll be about the atmosphere, I think, more than the quality of the match itself, because he has limitations. We see what those limitations are. The match itself was nothing special. The finish was even worse. The finish was atrocious. And the fact that they sent Travis Scott out there, who I understand he's training to wrestle, and so they're going to want him to get involved here. Maybe he'll wrestle a match at some point. Honestly, I don't give a fuck. If he wrestles, great. If he doesn't, fine. But the fact that they sent him out there and The Rock couldn't be bothered to be at WrestleMania, why was The Rock involved in this story to begin with? Explain that to me. And I don't want to hear, well, The Rock had to be involved because that was the spark that led to the John Cena heel turn. Any number of ways you could have turned John Cena heel. You could have turned John Cena heel at WrestleMania. Now, it would have made for an even more boring build because you would have had two babyface John Cena, babyface Cody Rhodes. They're like one and the same, right? That would have been pretty fucking boring. But looking at what they did, I'm not so sure it wouldn't have been a better idea if they insisted on doing this match to just save the heel turn for WrestleMania. But then I guess it would have clashed with what they did last night. Because we had a heel turn last night, right? With the triple cross. With Heyman and Punk and Rollins and Reigns. But I'm not so sure it wouldn't have been a better idea to save the big John Cena heel turn and title change for the same night. Instead, we had John Cena as a heel on television for, you know, three times, whatever it was. Not giving us a whole lot of anything. No mention of The Rock after that amazing angle they did at the Elimination Chamber. And so you're like, well, Rock's not showing up on TV. I'm sure he'll be at WrestleMania. I'm sure there'll be some, you know, either twist to this or he'll be there. He'll be involved in some way. We'll get the next, you know, chapter of this. We got nothing. We got nothing. Everything was built around selling their soul to The Rock. And The Rock couldn't even be bothered to be there at WrestleMania. He didn't have to be involved in this at all. If all he was going to do was inject himself into a story that he had no business even being a part of. John Cena had already won the Elimination Chamber. He had already earned the right to challenge for the championship at WrestleMania. You didn't need to involve The Rock in this story. You got people's hopes up at the end of the Chamber pay-per-view for something that you were never going to deliver on. Because if they were going to, we would have had more than what we got here at the end of WrestleMania. It's fucking WrestleMania. And this is the ending that they come up with? So I don't know what's up with The Rock. I don't know if he's busy with something else. I don't know what his schedule is like, but I don't care. Like, I'm looking at where we were and how we got here. And I'm just wondering, why did he have to be involved in this at all? If there was not going to be any follow-up. And you know I just find this hilarious, because I'm sure you're going to have people who are going to be like, oh, well, still, you got to let it play out. Maybe he'll show up. You got to let it play out. Dude, the last time we saw him was March 1st. WrestleMania is over. Okay, it's been 6 or 7 weeks. If it hasn't happened by now, we're not seeing him. And even if we do, what's it going to be? One appearance and then he disappears again? The Rock didn't need to be a part of this. That's why I said at the beginning of this review, I think what's going on here is The Rock is who he is. He's on the board of TKO. He's a big-time celebrity. And when The Rock decides he wants to come back and do something, he comes back and does it. And whatever their plans are, be damned. You know, I almost feel bad for Triple H, but not really. But like, if you're on the creative team, just imagine. You know, The Rock is like, hey, I'm Bad Blood, Atlanta. I'm going to be in Atlanta. Okay, we got to work him into the show. Now you're getting everyone's hopes up. Oh shit, The Rock is here. They must have some big plan, right? Then we don't see him again for what, 3 or 4 months. Then he comes back out of the blue. Out of the blue. And he wants Cody to sell his soul to him. They're continuing that story. Ooh, let's see where this is going to go. And then they turn John Cena heel in his retirement year. One of the biggest names in the history of this company. And he turns heel for the first time in 2 decades, right? That's big fucking news. And he's there with The Rock. Wow, this is exciting. Where is this going to go? And it goes nowhere. It's such a cock tease with everything that they have been doing up until this point. I don't understand the point of it. And if you don't have any great idea to really follow up on that and do something with it, then don't fucking do it. That's what I don't understand. So the ending of this WrestleMania sucked, but I'm hopeful that with Cena as the champion, we'll get some fun matches out of it with some old opponents that he can work with one last time before he rides off into the sunset, before he does his redemption arc, which we all know is coming later in the year. It's just a shame that they did what they did tonight in this match, his last WrestleMania match. Now, one of the odd things about John Cena is for as long as he's been in this company, and for all the great matches that he's had, so many of them, most of them, have not happened at WrestleMania, right? He had that one great match with Shawn Michaels, which wasn't even the best match they had that month. But yeah, they had a pretty good match at WrestleMania in Detroit. And he's had some good ones. But for all the great matches that this guy has been a part of, really none of them have happened at WrestleMania. And I was there for the 2 Rock matches. The first Rock match was a big deal. It was the clash of two generations. I wouldn't say it was one of his best matches, though. It's kind of odd how when you look at his body of work, there's hardly, in my opinion anyway, there's hardly anything in that like upper tier of what he's done that has actually happened at WrestleMania. And unfortunately, this match is not going to be added to that list either, because I didn't think this match was anything great. It's almost like Cody had to dumb things down because they worked at a very deliberately slow pace. And they kept that pace for pretty much the entire, like, it didn't build to anything. They just kept that pace for the entire match because, again, Cena is limited in what he can do. And so it's unfortunate. It was a huge come down from the last 2 years of Cody main events, because we've seen Cody go out there and, you know, tear it up with Roman and Seth and, you know, all these different people. This was not that. And it started with such high hopes with that opening match, and it peaked. It peaked with the opening match. So I go back to what I said at the beginning of this review. WrestleMania Saturday was a very mediocre, sometimes very boring show with an excellent main event. And WrestleMania Sunday was largely a very good to great show until we got to the main event. It's like the tale of two WrestleMania shows. WrestleMania 41 will not go down as one of the great WrestleManias that they've ever done. Unfortunately. What did you think of WrestleMania Night 2? Let's take a look at the Twitter poll. And again, under 50% here for thumbs up. 48% thumbs up. About 31% thumbs in the middle. And 21% thumbs down. And we already have almost 4,000 votes in on the poll. So you can go vote at Solomonster and follow on X.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
We have no time to waste here because it is time to be the booker. And then we are going to get the fuck out of here because it is very late. It is almost 3 o'clock in the morning. So let's take care of round number one here. And we have got Booker T and Goldust are kicking us off here. Tag team, be the booker. This is usually how we start. It's just a fun little thing we do here at the end of the streams if we hit certain goals. It's a randomizer that I've put together here. And it's going to be Booker T and Goldust against the Quebecers. Bones Jones says, this stream almost as long as WrestleMania. We're getting close. We are getting close. All right, women's be the booker. Liv Morgan. There she is, the former women's world champion, former tag team champion now too. Liv Morgan. You know what I love about that world title picture or win? That was in Saudi Arabia. And I have it as the header photo in our Facebook group, our private group on Facebook. This great screenshot of her celebrating and posing with the championship, and right behind her is this giant Solomonster Sounds Off sign. It's awesome. Liv Morgan against Zarya. That's going to be a match one day. When Zarya gets called up, it's going to be a match on the main roster. And in our main event, oh my God, say his name and look who appears in the main event of all nights. Joe Hendry is one half of our main event. Can you believe this? It's like it was meant to be. Say he's having quite the night. Yes, he is. Oh, his night just got a lot better. Because Joe Hendry is wrestling Sting. How about that? Joe Hendry wrestles Randy Orton and Sting in the same night. He's peaked. It doesn't get any better than that. So because you hit the other goal, we have to do a second round. I don't know if we're going to top what we just did. We're going to try, though. Joe Hendry's having a hell of a night, even though it didn't end well with Randy Orton. Let's start with the tag team match. It'll be a last man standing. Has there ever been a last man standing tag team match? I feel like there probably was. Oh boy, it is the Toxic Turtles. The Toxic Turtles have appeared in Be the Booker. Bonus points to you if you know who the Toxic Turtles are. You never know what you're going to find here in Be the Booker. It's going to be the Toxic Turtles against the Motor City Machine Guns in a last man standing match. And I have to give it the buzzer for a very specific reason, because it is a last man standing match. And unfortunately, it is not a last turtle standing match. And so that is an automatic buzz. I'm sorry. Those are the rules. Those are the rules. Any other stipulation, I probably would have given it a bell. All right, women's be the booker. A women's tables, ladders, and chairs match. Starring our women's world champion, Io Sky. Very successful night for her at WrestleMania. She's going to put her title on the line here in a TLC match against Trish Stratus. Oh my goodness. Sign me the fuck up for that match. I'll take some of that. And in the main event, it will be a hair match. Somebody is getting shaved bald in the main event. Who is it going to be, though? Let's find out. We're ending with a hair match after this. After all this, we're ending with a hair match. Jay Briscoe. The late, great Jay Briscoe. He's got some hair there. I miss Jay Briscoe. Jay Briscoe against the Indie God. The Deathmatch King, Matt Cardona. Can't give it the Sonic Sweep, though, because we fucked up the tag team match. There you go. Be the Booker is in the books. And I will be in my bed in minutes. But first, I have to say thank you for everybody who stuck with me. It is almost 3 o'clock in the morning, and we still are right around 3,400 live here on YouTube. So you guys are crazy. We had almost 5,000 in here, and you killed it with all the support. M. Mills with that $500 bomb, my goodness. And everybody else. I mean, it's not just M. Mills, everybody. There's a lot of work and time and effort that goes into this, and just everything between the prep and the graphics and the podcast today, and it's a lot. So to see this kind of support, that means something to me. Just know that. Retro KOH, why does counting get scary after 6? Because 7, 8, 9, and 10. See, that was cute. I like that. Thank you, Retro. As I said before, I did a podcast today, well over 2 hours, episode 910. If you didn't listen to it, it'll be there waiting for you in the morning. So go ahead and you can stream it, you can download it anywhere you get your podcast from, and I will see you live on this channel, in less than 24 hours, because we got the post-WrestleMania Raw. Maybe there'll be some big stuff that goes down. I certainly hope it's better than what we got here at the end of this show. Be well, stay safe, have a great night, hit that like button on your way out, and I will see you for more Sound Off. The work never ends. I'll see you tomorrow night.